Welcome to the Archives of the Loralee Show, conversation for exploration, timeless discussions to challenge and expand our worldview. And while you may find our guests fascinating, the views expressed may not necessarily reflect those of our own or of the Cuyamangue Institute. That's why we call it Conversation for Exploration. And join in our ongoing live events, interviews, our own presentations, and much, much more as we go exploring. Learn more at CuyamangueInstitute.com and Loralee.com. And hello there, I'm Loralee, and thanks for tuning into Conversation for Exploration. Let's talk about sound. We've examined sound from so many different aspects. Now we're going to talk about sound and specific types of music that can heal. For example, our next guest, Don Campbell, author of The Mozart Effect, a term he coined to describe the healing properties of sound and music. He says that his research, has demonstrated that certain music can affect our heartbeat, our pulse, our blood pressure, respiration. It can increase endorphin levels. It can affect our body's temperature, boost the immune system. It can regulate stress hormones. It can strengthen memory and learning. We heard about that from Sheila Ostringer and Lynn Schroeder in Super Learning. The certain types of sound can even stimulate digestion, generate sense of safety and well-being. So many things that sound and music can do for us. Similar, I guess, to what sonic bloom can do for plants, as we talked about a few months ago. Let's welcome Don Campbell to join us. Hi, Don.
Good evening from Boulder, Colorado.
Just going to mention, you're in Boulder, Colorado. You have been working with sound and music for a long, long time. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I'm a classical musician. I grew up in Texas and in Paris, where I studied at the conservatory. Studying piano, organ, and conducting. And after graduate studies, I was fortunate to go to Asia for 7 years. I was a music critic for classical music, and at the same time began studying Indian music and Japanese ancient music called Kagaku. So,
what an interesting name.
It was a wonderful combination. Tokyo is quite an international city. And then I came back to the States, this was 20 years ago, and worked as an educational director for over 10,000 music organizations, and then began in 1982 studying the psychology of music, different forms of cross-cultural music therapy, and became aware of the remarkable work of Dr. Alfred Tomatis in France, who has helped us bridge the ancient and the technological worlds of sound.
You've told us a lot of interesting episodes where even Dr. Tomatis, as he worked with various children and patients and people, was discovering there on the spot some of the far-ranging healing benefits of music. What did you exactly do in his institute?
Well, in the mid-1950s, Dr. Tomatis began exploring with certain frequency responses for children who did not speak well, remember well, who were autistic. And until the late 60s, he developed a process of using sound that was filtered, using music, Gregorian chant, Mozart, as well as a lot of spoken texts. And he found that by exercising the middle ear, it became possible for people to heighten their attentiveness, to be able to learn to speak better and communicate better. What has now developed into over 200 centers throughout the world, and with tens of thousands of people now in nearly 30 years who have worked with this process, we found that there's much more to the ear than just what we hear. It's a vital organ of balance, and that helps organize the central nervous system. It gives us a sense of posture, laterality, spatiality. And when we put sound frequencies in our ear, it affects the brain and the body in many, many more ways than what we ever thought to be just hearing. And in my own work, I've been looking at the components, the physiology of music, And why does music bring about certain shifts physiologically, emotionally, spiritually, in some people and not in other people? And is it why do different cultures use different sounds? So the Mozart effect is about these universal qualities of a sound and how they organize and how we can begin now to delineate really well how to use music in our lives, not just put on something soft and slow and then you're going to get well. How can we really improve our health, our well-being, our learning through some of the best art that has been created in all cultures?
I was wondering, why is it that music can affect the physiology, certain types of music, classical music, for example, as opposed to some raucous rock music, even though you say there's some strains of rock music that work quite well, but so it's really dependent upon the sound, the rhythm, the tones, the frequencies, and all of that. And there's some that work better than others. But,
well, it's an organization of patterns. It's like pattern and coding. And the senses are very sophisticated. Dr. Tomatis helped me realize that there was a tremendous difference between hearing and listening. And that it's not just what kind of auditory stimulation we have, just the rhythm, just the harmonic flow, or just the melodies. It's how we receive the sound. Are we lying down with our eyes closed? Are we sitting up? Are we jogging? Are we driving in our car? If we listen to music and we're under very, very high pressure or stress, auditory information can actually aggravate the body, where the same music later on can serve as good and dynamic sonic caffeine. We've really outgrown the day where anyone can say, hey, take a dose of Mozart or take a dose of New Age music, take this and it'll do that. That's kind of bad medicine. That's where we've come from. We're really looking at how we orchestrate through sound this mind-body relationship and how the voice itself helps express and relieve tension from the body and activate the brain. It's far more complex and interesting than I ever thought when I started on this path.
And we will get into those complexities of sound, music, and rhythm, frequency, tone, all of that with Don Campbell, author of The Mozart Effect, when we return. I'm Laura Lee. We're talking with Don Campbell, author of The Mozart Effect, here on The Laura Lee Show. And Don, I love your definition of sound. In your book, The Mozart Effect, you say that you explain to your students that sound is energy that can be organized into shapes, patterns, figures, and mathematical proportions, as well as into music, speech, and utterances of agony and bliss. It's what our ancestors call the beginning. It's the ohm of the East and the word of the West, the background noises of galaxies forming, the symphony of wind and water, the companion of carriages and all moving objects, and the dialogue we have with each other and ourselves at home, work, and play. You know, one of the most fascinating properties of sound that I've discovered, and you cover this also, is the work of Hans Jenny with looking at vibration through a membrane upon which lycopodium dust moves around into all sorts of interesting geometric shapes. So it's nice to see, in a visual sense, those mathematical properties of sound as well. Fascinating, isn't it?
We are just now touching the beginning of this work with sound as a healer. And I'm so excited that it's being realized in composers like Mozart and Bach and others, that it can also be in phenomenal art forms as well, because every culture along the way has created what it's needed to express itself, release its anger, invoke divinity. And being able to develop a really good balanced diet of sound is one of my great crusades. We don't want to leave out the wonderful gamelan and Bali or the gagaku of Japan, but we don't want to forget the classical composers as well.
Well, also, it's another way to enjoy the rich tapestry of human culture through the ages and around the globe by looking at all the various contributions musically, just one more aspect to enjoy the tapestry, the artwork.
That's right. And what has amazed me, I must say my favorite composers are Debussy and Bach, but there's something magical about Mozart in the way that he organizes time and space through sound. He's not quite as dynamic or emotional as Beethoven. He's not as moody as the Romantics. He's not as spacious as Gregorian chant or New Age. But he's almost like a perfect template. I call him the power bar of sound. He's just a balanced nutrition, not a lot of fat, sodium. He doesn't put you to sleep. He doesn't put you into trance. In a way, he kind of takes us out of trance. His music is transcendent.
Sheila Ostringer and Lynn Schroeder were telling us about just putting a little Mozart or other classical music, particularly with the 10-12 beat per minute, I guess, in the background.
About 60, I think.
60, okay.
10 or 12 will
put you to sleep, maybe it's something else. In the background, when you're trying to do your studies or learn or concentrate, do you use sound like that? Many ways to use sound. Is that one of the ways in which you recommend?
Yes. Their work reflects what Dr. Georgi Lazanov was saying in Bulgaria, that Baroque music, which is also beautifully and simply organized, the slow movements between 52 and 60 beats per minute help us slow down and focus. In the classroom, it's possible to play this music in the background, and after you get used to it, a teacher finds that their voice begins to speak more melodically. It slows down, and people have a better way of listening. The music serves as a stimulation and an envelope, and the point is not just using Mozart, but using Mozart as a model that is very simple, a simple sonata allegro form that is very much the way the body itself heals and orchestrates itself, that the music itself creates a good guideline for us to learn how to study, how to concentrate, how to really focus. And it seems to have worked in some very fascinating case studies with people in recovery rooms and hospitals, as well as children who've been born prematurely, that Mozart's music gives them it helps the body organize. I wish I had all the answers of exactly why this happens. I know this happens with many kinds of music, but there's probably never been so much research as there has been with Mozart, and that's why I chose the name The Mozart Effect.
Tell us a few of those case studies. You have whole chapters on some of those stories, quite startling, where you can really pinpoint, music helped here in some profound and unexpected ways.
Well, as I say, half of it has to do with how one receives the music, but we're finding that there is a consistent result with people who are undergoing treatments in cancer, in chemotherapy, if they have music that slows them down and yet still has a steady, conscious beat and a melody, something that has safety about it but is also organized, it cuts down the amount of nausea. Mm-hmm. There have been thousands upon thousands of studies in using music before surgery where very slow ambient kinds of music, now this would even be slower than most Mozart, but to use forms of New Age music or chanting, whatever's appropriate, allows a person to go into surgery and literally not need nearly as much anesthesia. Pat Cook, in your area, she lives in Bainbridge Island and has the Open Ear Center, mm-hmm. Who might be fascinating for your program. She has done extraordinary work in cross-cultural uses of music, as well as what's happening in hospitals. She's just now completing her doctorate from the University of Washington in these studies.
Medical schools are now teaching the efficacy of prayer. Larry Dossey's been instrumental in getting out the research on how prayer is effective. The use of color and how color can affect us. I know they use paint holding cells pink because it calms people down, for example. Even scent and how scent affects the physiology.
Yes.
We're finding all of these things go into affect us. I know that commercial uses for certain scents, getting people to buy more, has been employed. What future uses do you think, both in the healing arts and even commercial uses, because advertisers and retailers want to direct our purchasing habits?
Well, it's a matter of really coding ourselves. The auditory system is far more impressive in the body than any of the other senses. It's the first 16 weeks after conception we begin to literally hear. Know that even when one is in surgery, the auditory tracts still are working. It's a system that is the first and the most thorough sense through a life, and that even people who are deaf receive this information through the vibration in their bones and in their skin.
We're going to come right back with Don Campbell of The Mozart Effect and talk more about the science behind and the effective use of music and sound for healing. I'm Laura Lee. We are continuing our conversation with Don Campbell. Music therapy is the topic, and he's the author of The Mozart Effect. And we were just asking Don, what kind of applications, as we learn more and more about the physiological effect that certain music and tones have on us, well, what commercial applications and medical applications could he see in future? And in his book, fascinating read, The Mozart Effect, he talks about monasteries in Brittany where monks play music to the animals that they care for. They found that by doing so, cows serenaded with Mozart give more milk. He talks about certain bakeries in Japan or certain noodle makers in Japan. They sell musical udon, U-D-O-N, it's a type of noodle, and they make it. They make these noodles while playing Vivaldi's The Four Seasons and the chirping of birds and playing in the background. Of course, you know, this is fascinating because you want to sell your products with having some special cachet or premium value. And so by making something and playing music in the background, what kind of effect can be transferred into the noodles? That's interesting. I'm going to have to ask him about that. Also, he says that a brewery in northern Japan finds that Mozart makes the best sake, and that the yeast used for brewing this traditional Japanese rice wine, it's a measure of the quality of it, increases by a factor of 10 by playing. So even bacteria and yeast are affected by music. This is fascinating. The city, he says, the reports that the city of Edmonton in Canada pipes in Mozart string quartets in the city squares, and this calms pedestrian traffic, and drug dealings have lessened in that area. So there you have a city using it to help the population behave better. There's also a bakery that sets bread to rise to Symphony No. 6 for 72 hours. That bakery was in Japan.
That's Beethoven's bread.
Beethoven bread. I was surprised to learn of some of these applications commercially by, you know, quaint and fun applications. So what do you think of that?
I think all of that is just wonderfully amusing and delicious. I think we all know that if we have pulsating, loud, and ugly sounds around us, that our bread won't rise. But what is so amazing is that we're finding we can use music as a perfect complementary medicine and environmental tool to help us stay focused and to improve our health. I know how essential it was in my own life. I had four years ago this month, I had an inch and a half blood clot behind my right eye in the carotid artery, and they really expected me to have massive strokes. And in the midst of a very serious time with a lot of MRIs, I was fortunate to work with my doctor directly here at St. Joseph's in Denver. And I believe the new paradigm for using music is where the patient and the doctor work together to orchestrate the right psychological, emotional, and rhythmic environment for a specific disease or condition. In my own case, any rise in blood pressure could have caused a stroke. And so I knew it was essential. I had about 48 hours with my doctor to decide if we were going to have a very serious surgery that would end up removing about a third of the right side of my skull, for us to realize what could I do for myself within music and sound that would allow me to work with him. I didn't use music as an alternative medicine. I used it as a complementary medicine. And as I explain in the Mozart Effect, within 3 weeks that clot was nearly all gone. I've been fortunate twice in my life to use music and sound. Self-generated sound called toning, using my own voice, imagery, prayer, as well as quality music. And I believe the new paradigm in music and sound is where people will be able to have a selection of sounds, not just emotionally based, where, oh, I like this piece of music, it must be good for me. Well, we know that that's not always true in food. We need to have a balanced diet, that we are finding that certain kinds of music have certain kinds of nutrients, and these nutrients can actually heal the body.
Nutrients in what sense? Because they stimulate the production of a certain hormone or brain chemistry?
Well, there's some very interesting studies about the midbrain function in the limbic system to find that there are kinds of music that awaken a sense of feeling loved, feeling well, spiritual music, hymns, gospel, music has an actual chemical response in the brain that at times can actually improve the T-cell count.
Mm-hmm. Like laughter, for example, even feeling good can also produce some beneficial biochemicals.
Yes.
In a sense.
We know that drum beats and rhythmic patterns for people in severe pain actually helps the brain create endorphins that are the pain inhibitors. There are so many different ways by which we can use sound and music, and we're just now getting the right kind of guidelines that allow us to do this with integrity, dignity, and what I believe is important, real artistry.
When you were looking to heal the blood clot and experimenting with what sound could do for you, you mentioned how you were careful not to tone too loud. You didn't want to shake the blood clot loose so it would end up in your bloodstream and creating a stroke. So you went at it very gently. But the fact remains that toning, you're creating a series of sounds and frequencies in the skull, and this can reverberate through the
yeah.
organs and all of this. I remember that. And it's so powerful, and I know you use it to energize and to wake yourself up and to feel better. It really works, and I'd like to have you explain toning in just a bit so we can all try this at home. But I know that I had a stomachache once, and a friend had a didgeridoo, the Australian long, natural, hollow tree, just wonderful didgeridoos, and they're just lovely. But he aimed it at my stomach, and he just blew on it for it made this beautiful evocative sound, and I really felt, and I could feel it. I could feel it vibrating against my solar plexus, and it just instantly, the pain melted away. So also, you've got the sound waves hitting, going through the air and hitting and creating an actual physical effect. Does that also
right.
create this effect?
But I think that we also need to be aware that it's like any kind of medicine. It may have healed you. At the same time, it might give someone else a stomachache in another context. Sound is so powerful in the body that what I really hope is people can find their own way to make their own sounds and find their own ways with this. The didgeridoo is really a phenomenal healing instrument, and what research I'm aware of how it affects brain waves is really quite extraordinary.
I guess what I was asking, though, Don, was how does it work? If we can, many things can help stimulate the production of beneficial biochemicals in the brain and the body. But also, you've got the actual sound hitting the physical tissue, and I was wondering, is that also another mechanism how this healing effect is
that
generated?
That is, and I know a number of people in Europe are beginning to do work with the body. What we're finding is that different organs are different sizes in different people, and they're different physiological responses that are going on. We're able to find that the cells themselves, Fabien Mamon has done a very curious book that has just been published where he shows cancer cells as they respond to different tonalities. Mm-hmm. And it's my belief that if we tone ourselves, if we just keep an elongated or or without turning it into music or a melody, mm-hmm. and we do this for 3 to 5 minutes at a time, we can measure muscle tension, skin responses, as in temperature. We know the brainwaves change, the respiration changes, the heartbeat, and even blood pressure. Not to mention what happens inside the skull itself, because it is through your own voice you can massage your head, your skull, from the inside out. And so it's a combination of all of these things that are now coming together that supplement, in a way, what music therapists have been doing for the last 40 years with rehabilitation, working with different disabilities and diseases that have, like, not diseases, but head injuries, per se. This field is just now beginning to blossom, and I would want to caution us as we go forward that we're just in the beginnings of this, and the ancient traditions inspire us to move forward and find a way to balance the arts and the sciences so that we really do have the fine art of health coming into our ears.
I visited a researcher locally who keeps his work very under wraps because he's afraid the FDA will come in and shut him down for practicing without a license or something. So I would not mention his name, but he was looking at cells under the microscope, and he was applying certain tones and frequencies, and he was finding that when he found the right frequency for the right type of virus or cell, it would actually break down. He could actually explode it.
Yes,
in a
I
sense.
Have. I've seen those studies.
Yeah, much like certain tones can shatter glass, for example. So tell us a bit about that.
Well, the amazing thing is we have found in under the microscope things work, but inside the living body has been even, it takes on a different resonant field.
Well, that makes sense.
Uh-huh. And so we're beginning to look at how do we transpose what has been going on in the outer test tube, so to speak, and then how do we put it to work in our body. My belief in the years that are coming forth is that we will begin to equip ourselves through imagery, visualization, as well as a type of sound and movement process that allows each and every one of us to tune ourselves up from the inside out.
Sherry Edwards listens to your voice, and then she can tell you with perfect pitch and whatever special ability she has, you're missing a certain C range. And then if you play this certain C range, you get what you're missing or something. I'm sure you've looked into her work. What do you think?
Well, I think that the voice changes every day. I have had over 3,000 students in the last 10 years through the Institute of Music Health and Education and other workshops that I'm constantly doing, where we have done voice analysis in regard to the audiographic analysis, in other words, using Tomatis's work. He has found that the voice only produces what the ear can hear. And by looking at the overtones, not the fundamentals per se, but looking at the overtones within the voice, the richness qualities of the voice, that by stimulating the ear, especially the right ear, with certain patterns of Mozart's music and chanting, that it actually changes the voice almost instantly. And so this I find very, very interesting. But our voice changes with age, with time of day, with the temperature, and that I think that the overtones and the higher frequencies within the voice is where the real magic lies in analysis. And we're just now be able to have the kinds of devices that look at this in a very acute way. Dr. Paul Moses at Stanford University Hospital in San Francisco did remarkable work in this field, and that's what I have based a lot of my research on.
So the key then is to not listen to specific sounds that you're supposedly missing on whatever day. It's to teach you to hear so that you can then reproduce the sounds for more complete.
I believe it's a self-organizing agent, and if we simply tone, allow our voice to re-educate our body, we really do tune up a lot. There are a lot of different directions we can go, and I know that everyone is finding different ways to do this. I'll be every week or two I'm somewhere in the country. I know I'm in Los Angeles in a week or two. I'm in Baltimore this weekend, and I do a long summer program here in Colorado called the Magic Flute, Drum, and Voice, where we use the music of Mozart to show us the myth in that extraordinary opera, which is a Freemasonic opera that has very, very wonderful esoteric symbolism, but show how we can very practically put it into work in our own life using our voice, using a drum, and using the tapes and CDs that we have. So the Mozart effect comes back to the universal qualities of music that we can put to work in our life through our own body naturally.
And he was a Freemason. Why does that not surprise me? We're going to take your phone calls for Don Campbell. Questions, comments, stories of your own, wants to share some research about sound and music and its healing therapies that you've come across. I'm Laura Lee. Laura Lee and the Laura Lee Show. We are taking calls for Don Campbell, author of The Mozart Effect. By the way, I want to recommend this book because it can tell you how to put music to good use in your own life and for your own health. Linda's in Hershey, Pennsylvania, listening to WHP. Hi, Linda. Thanks for joining us.
Hello. I am really happy that I can have this opportunity because I wanted to know, first of all, dialogue or communication about the value of the voice.
I wrote a book on the voice and healing called The Roar of Silence, and it's a 7 or 8 week course just on toning, using the vowel sounds and knowing how to use them with visualizations and meditations that open up the voice. Whether you're a singer or whether you've just only hummed to yourself in the car, it's a very practical guidebook on releasing the inhibitions or stress within the body through the voice.
Are you familiar at all with eurythmy?
Very much so. I've worked in England and in Germany and with the beautiful work of Rudolf Steiner in the tonalization of movement.
And the gestures, putting
very,
sound
very,
into gesture for healing.
And extremely important.
Couldn't help but think of that so closely connected with what you're saying. But along with that, I just have felt all along there's a role for the voice to play that I would like to have a part in also.
Great. Linda, thanks and good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
You bet. Eurythmist. What is she talking about?
It's eurythmy.
Eurythmy.
And this
okay.
was developed by Rudolf Steiner, who was the founder of the Waldorf schools.
Oh, we're familiar with Steiner. He's one
and,
of those key
eurythmy
researchers.
Is really the tonalization of movement. And there's curative eurythmy. There are a number of things that move with the natural movement and the unfoldment of sound in the body. And it's one of the most artistic and evocative forms of self-expression I've experienced.
Huh. Margie, you're next. Thanks for joining
us.
Hi.
Yeah, Don, I have a question in a couple of parts. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the difference between left and right ear dominant.
Yes.
And,
Dr. Tomatis seems to be emphatic that the right ear is the leading ear of consciousness, and that that is because the right ear is the quickest way to the left brain language centers. It is like a dominance, like a hand dominance. And yet he feels that the right ear, when stimulated, very clearly with patterns, especially high frequency, as held within Mozart's music, creates a almost awakening sense of coming out of trance. We become more aware of the world around us, more aware of our own language. We become better listeners, and through a long process of listening to very clear and specific music that is filtered, that this right ear becomes very, very strong, and that it strengthens the whole body. In chapters 1 and 2 of my book, The Mozart Effect, I try to give a good direction, because this is a very complex system. It's not a matter of just an auditory system. It is the nervous system. It's the way you experience spatiality, laterality, up and down, past and future.
So you would expect a lot of changes in your life if you...
There's much to be said for that. Dr. Tomatis also wrote a wonderful biography called The Conscious Ear, and I think it's one of the most evocative books I've ever read. It has to do with conscious listening. I think the two things I would do is set 2 or 3 times a day for 5 minutes of sound in your life. One would be for humming and toning. Mm-hmm. One would be for this kind of stimulation, for deep relaxation, and another one would be for creative time, where you just enjoy, let music come into your body. We live in such a loud world with all the noises and the radios and the TVs and the computers and the air conditioners. One of the greatest gifts you may give yourself is true silence with just a very low hum.
Mm-hmm. The other question I had was about sonic birth that Dr. Tomatis talked about.
Yes.
And is that something that would be beneficial to somebody to experience?
Well, the sonic birth is a very interesting process that comes between 2 to 4 weeks of listening to very specific sounds. Most of it is high-frequency Mozart.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not necessary for absolutely everybody. The sonic birth is when he calls the mother and father ears come together and we develop our own real voice. And so children with ADD, dyslexia, and even some forms of autism really do have a sonic birth. I have experienced that with a number of children. I have seen that take place, and it is really phenomenal. I think I'm 51 years old. I think in my own life, I find that it kind of helps keep me young and keep me vitalized.
And we'll continue with Don Campbell and more of your questions and comments. Coming up, I'm Laura Lee. Let's continue our conversation with Don Campbell. We've looked at sound from many, many different angles over the show over the last several years, and Don is offering now the report, The Science and the Techniques, and the case histories to demonstrate music, certain specific types of music. He says Mozart in particular and other Baroque composers can be a very powerful and effective therapy. And we've looked at the physiological effect. We just outlined that last hour. We looked and asked how it works, entrainment of brain waves, production of beneficial biochemical compounds in the body. We've looked at the super learning effects. We've looked at, you mentioned overtones. I even have visited and met the Giotto monks and heard them sing. I still don't know what an overtone is, Don. You'll have to tell us. Also, hold on, just want to mention, you've also told us that while music has long been one of the most transcendental art forms, it's now just an emerging science. And you also told us a lot, but not all, about the work of one of your mentors, French researcher Alfred Tomatis. It's Tomatis, Alfred Tomatis. I want to hear more about his theories, because they're hard to get at first, hard to grasp at first. But first, could you demonstrate toning for us?
Well, toning is just the elongation of a vowel sound. It can just start with a simple hum. Mm-hmm. And if you put your hand on your cheek, you're going to be able to tell that your jaw and your skull is vibrating. Om, naturally being as important a worldwide sound, is important because it holds a lot of the sounds. You were asking me about what were overtones. The vowel with the most overtones is the E sound. E.
Okay.
Because it's so bright.
Hmm.
And the brightness of a sound, the color of a sound, determines how many overtones it is. The overtones allow you to tell the difference between an oboe and a flute. They have different qualities. So as we use our voice in different pitches with different vowels, we actually vibrate or massage or create different epicenters in our skull. And the ability to use the voice as a, I call it a contemplative tool for self-understanding, allows us to work very efficiently in our mind and body. If you're a meditator, just spend 5 minutes on a hum with your eyes closed before you begin your meditation, and you'll see that physiologically you're already a half hour down the pike for the balanced brain waves and the ability to experience a contemplative nature.
And how do you breathe when you're toning?
It breathes for you.
Mm-hmm.
Once you start doing it, all these autonomic systems within the body begin to take over.
How do you know where the right pitch is for your own toning
purposes? It has to be natural, no stress, and relaxed. The only rule about toning is to keep the jaw relaxed.
And about 5 minutes will do it.
By that time, you will experience the effects. The hardest part is the first couple of minutes, because the left brain gets in there and starts to say, this is silly, this isn't making sense. And
tone first again so we can get a sense of what it's going to sound like.
Hold a tone.
It sounds like you started with your mouth closed and then you opened your mouth.
That's right.
Sounded like. Okay.
In my book, The Roar of Silence, as well as in The Mozart Effect, they're easy exercises. I think one of the greatest mysteries of all sounds is why we don't use it. We're equipped.
And you say it's a great way to massage the inside of your own head. Use your own voice for
healing. It's the only way. It really is.
Yeah, because you're generating the tone inside your head, and it's setting up some...
I know. If you put your palms of your hands on both sides of your cheek and go... You can actually feel the sound moving up and down.
Huh.
And if you're missing tones, it starts to fill them in within no time.
Oh, interesting. Let's take a few more calls. Jane in Albany on WGY is next. Hi, Jane. Thanks for joining us.
I have severe background diabetic retinopathy, and I understand there's closed vessels that cannot be treated with laser. And my question is, can the music stimulate the small vessels in the back of the eye to aid in the circulation?
Oh, good question. She has retinopathy, which means a closure of the small blood vessels in the back of the eye, which are hard to reach.
Yes.
So can toning and music help stimulate those hard-to-reach capillaries?
I would say try about 3 minutes at a time,
okay,
5 or 6 times a day, just a gentle hum as you image that part. One of the greatest things is our enthusiasm sometimes gets us in trouble by overstimulating things.
Okay.
But work with your own voice and try this. I'm very reluctant to make any kind of prescription over the phone, you know, without having a chance to get to know you.
This is interesting. You have a chapter looking at all the various uses of music therapy. And in China, they have a series of albums with the titles of various disorders where they what have they done? Looked at hearts.
One's on diet, one's on... I say this a little humorously, but it's I bought it in Hong Kong a year or so ago, but the name of the album is Constipation.
Okay.
And
if you're constipated, play this music? Is that the idea?
Play this music, and it also asks you to drink a lot of water as you listen to the music. It's beautiful music. It's just really stunning. But I've got to remember to try it myself.
Jeff, we have Jeff now. Actually, you're in Pennsylvania. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for joining us with Don Campbell.
Hi, Jeff.
I've done some toning and stuff and do find it very interesting. My question was, I do a lot of motorcycle touring cross-country, and for long distances you're riding, and there's a lot of different vibrations and tones that come up from the engine, and I was wondering if any of these can be, like, disharmonizing to the body.
Well, it's very important. You might try wearing earplugs if you're... There's a way to help yourself in that environment. We do know that some people begin to develop hearing loss if they are in too loud of a sounds for too long of a time. So I might suggest that certain kinds of headphones or earplugs might help you in that context. Also, find the tone that you're going down the highway at and hum along with it and see if that makes your drive any more pleasant.
Interesting advice.
Basically, what I'm understanding then is that the vibration doesn't have the effect on the body unless you hear it through the ears?
No, there's a tremendous amount of effect on the body through the skin and the bones. So we know with people with hearing disabilities actually receive the vibrations from sounds. And here at the University of Colorado in Boulder, there's a sound lab, there's a school room where all the floor brings the sound through the floor into the bodies, and there's a much more powerful experience. Sometimes the low sounds, I don't know if you remember ever as a kid being on the bus and letting your head rest on the window, how good that felt, that vibration. Some vibration can actually help put you to sleep and release stress. The main thing is to start really paying attention.
Thanks for the call, Jeff. When we come back, if you could spend just a few minutes giving us kind of an overview of the work of Dr. Tomatis and some of his new insights and way of thinking about hearing. I know that you mentioned he was the first to declare that the fetus can hear sounds, especially low-frequency sounds, through the womb. Now this is common knowledge. Back then it was pretty revolutionary. So he's looking at sound in a whole new way in our reception to sound, which adds insights into how sound can work as a healing mechanism. We'll return for that story with Don Campbell, author of The Mozart Effect. When we come back, I'm Laura Lee. Laura Lee on The Laura Lee Show. Isn't it fun to learn that music isn't just a pleasure to listen to, it's actually good for you as well? I'd always heard how musicians who start at an early age, in fact, you might have heard one of my vignettes about this, musician who starts playing music at an early age actually develop more corpus callosum, that connective tissue between the left and right hemisphere. Yet that's interesting, another way about how music can affect us physiologically. The work of Dr. Alfred Tomatis, just give me a quick overview.
Well, he's really given us the tools to show that music is essential in childhood, that the use of sound and music actually grows the brain itself. I know this is an outrageous statement, but if we look at the whole nervous system and how the ear allows us to stand up, move, balance our body, and regulate ourselves in space, we begin to see that the ear is much more than what we hear. He has developed with over 200 centers throughout the United States. There's one in Portland and even on Bainbridge. There are many places where you can go to learn about the extraordinary sense of the ear-voice connection. Most of these centers are in Europe, and Dr. Tomatis has posed, I believe, some of the most important questions scientifically and dynamically on how we develop language, movement, and how music and art actually help us keep centered and keep us well.
Oh, and connect us in a society, and has so many other functions. Paul and I howl with our Malamute wolf mix chants. I mean, it's just a wonderful bonding experience to start howling, and he howls along. It's just hilarious. So
that's right.
Even in a simple sense like that, it's a bonding experience.
Well, I was watching television the other night, and I was they were broadcasting Vertigo, Alfred Hitchcock's movie, and that, I believe that's 1957. There's a scene in there where the star actress says, "Oh, I've just talked to a musical therapist, and they say Mozart can help your vertigo."
Oh, how lovely.
And so Tomatis has given us the sense, as well as many other researchers, that sound is a nutritious part of our life, and let's learn more about it and find ways to keep our inner world in harmony. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, vertigo is a fear of heights, right? And so when you, the people who have it feel unbalanced when they get up high. They feel like they're going to fall over, right?
Well, it's part of an inner ear disorder as well.
Yeah, so it makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Any last words?
Keep humming and don't be afraid of good music.
Safe places to practice your toning, the shower, in the car, some other things. So that sounds like, you know, it just is enlivening, too, when you just start letting your voice tone and hum, and you kind of get into that groove and set that vibratory stuff going. So it's just a fun thing to do as well. I know we were toning in the Great Pyramid under the tutelage of John Anthony West. It's just sort of a little spiritual type thing. And we noticed, you love this story, we noticed that, and Paul took recording equipment into the King's Chamber, and there was, I think, 25 or so of us, and we toned in the King's Chamber, and it sounded like angelic, celestial music, like we were part of a professional choir. And we would tone in other places, and we, you know, we sounded like a bunch of people off-key, but we toned in the King's Chamber, and there was a certain vibratory quality that was just inherent. It just made us sound great. How do you explain that one?
Well, that's just part of the great choir, the wonderful acoustics. I've been there myself, and whether it's there in a cathedral or your shower, the main thing is use your voice. It's automatically there to release the grief, the pain, the temper, the frustration, as well as expressing the joy. And our voice is something that we don't want to forget to use just in a tonal aspect. You'll notice a healing taking place once you start.
Have you always had such a nice melodic voice, or did you work on it?
Well, no, I didn't have to work on it, but coming from South Texas, we all kind of talk melodically to start with, and then a little bit of musical training has helped as well.
Thanks for all your good work, and happy adventures, Don. I'm Laura Lee.
This has been Conversation for Exploration, and I want to thank you for joining us on our tour around the universe at large here tonight. And join us next time. I'm Laura Lee.